Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's really looking forward to meeting Michael Sheen. It's Richard Herring! Oh yeah, can't wait. It's going to be amazing. It's really going to be amazing. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much. You're much better than last week's audience. Welcome to Rich Chang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was inhaling gas with the priestess Pythia, still drunk from last week. Didn't think of how difficult it would be to say the priestess Pythia when I wrote this down. The Oracle of Delphi, as you know. She predicted in 3390 AD that in the future people will be calling this Rahalastapa. So that's how cool, pretty cool, pretty cool. Priestess Pythia. Hey, look, I've been doing the PTA quiz I mentioned last week. Been ruminating, thinking about it for a week. And we did okay. So, you know, it's nice living in a little village. And I don't really know the people very well, but I think everyone seems really nice. Everyone's really friendly. We're on a table of people whose kids are at the nursery, and they were lovely. And we did really well. We came second. We lost by 2 points. If we'd just played our joker on a different round, we'd have won. If someone said Meccano was Latin for I make, it was Lego. I'm not too worried. We did quite well. But the morning out, I tweeted saying, oh, you know, even in real life, I do as well at quizzes as I do on TV. And we'd come second. And then one of the winning team, who incidentally, there were 10 of them, and there were 8 on all the other teams, so I'm not saying anything. I'm not going to make a fuss. It was all in good fun. She tweeted me because there was a question saying which organ develops first in the human fetus. David, do you know the answer to that?
No, you don't know. It's the heart. That's because you don't have a heart, David, so you wouldn't know that. And some of the nicest men on the planet. Yeah, you wouldn't know. It's the heart. But anyway, she said. I'm just going to find it. She sent a link to Ranker.com, which is a very fine website, which said that scientists claim that babies start as an anus. She added, unless you got anus as well, then we actually won by 3 points. That wasn't a phrase I expected to be tweeted by a stranger from my village. I was pretty sure that anus is merely an opening and not an organ. But I Googled it first to check, and I was right. And so I said, but the anus is an opening, not an organ. I will content myself with knowing we got the most questions right, but were defeated by a bad joke around. I'm not going to let it go. She replied with a link to Quora, saying listed the anus as a sexual organ, saying I'm at a disadvantage because I don't understand Twitter, but the internet is keen to say that the anus is a multifunctional organ of great importance. And now I'm late for church. I said, don't let God hear you call it a sexual organ. Don't think that was his intention. She said, anal sex very rarely crops up on the third Sunday in the month family service. So it's, I love living in the countryside. That's all I'm saying. I didn't expect that on a Sunday morning, I have to say. So I don't even really know who that person is. But, you know, we're good friends. It was my wife's birthday, and if a comedian can't discuss anal sex with a stranger on his wife's birthday without getting into trouble, I mean, what can comedians do on their partner's birthdays? Still in it, isn't he? So, probably not while you're listening at home. So, it's... Okay, my guest tonight... probably best known for his appearance in Frost Nixon. Though you may know him from Word of the Year 2017. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nish Kumar! Thank you very much. Welcome, Nish. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you.
This is exactly the atmosphere I like to come out. Just audible and visible disappointment from a group of people who believed they would be seeing a legitimate bona fide movie star and instead have got to put up with the world's fattest Mo Salah lookalike. Here I am.
Thank you for stepping in.
No problem, mate. I mean, I feel like it's, you know, I feel great about it.
Well, you should, because, like, the first time you're on, just after Brexit, when things were a bit depressing.
Yeah, yeah.
When the vote had been made.
Yeah.
I was mainly joking about how few people were in the audience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now...
tonight, admittedly, mainly on the strength of those guys there. But what's interesting, people had a chance.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't know about this, the people who are here. To return your tickets, and about 20 people didn't want to see you.
Who, I mean, let's not beat around the bush, racist.
But in the end, more people paid to see tickets after your name came up than Michael Sheen had sold to at that point 2 weeks before.
So we're at net gain.
Yeah, you know, you've proven your worth.
I think we might, for my next, I'm doing some tour shows next year, and I think we might just say Michael Sheen's on all of them.
And
they just operate a very similar. But also, I would back him to play me.
Yeah.
I know that it might be racially spicy, right? But Sheen's got curly hair and a beard, and I think he and I should swap lives, and he should go sort of performing, you know, stand-up comedy in regional arts centres, and I should be in the next Tony Blair film, which I assume, like, because he's done everything, like, they did the deal and the Queen and the special relationship, which takes you up to Blair's relationship with Bill Clinton. So, I mean, it's slim pickings, isn't it? Like, all that's left is the Iraq War and lobbying for the Saudi government. So in 2020, look out for me in the film The Fucking Disappointing Cunt.
I was going to ask Michael Sheen.
Yeah. Who I am.
If he would appear in a new film I'm writing called Herring Blessed.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask him to play me.
Yeah.
And I would play Brian Blessed. But I reckon we could. You could play me and I could play Brian
Blessed. Yeah, I think I could.
Or either way, we could just swap over halfway through.
Yeah.
Because I realised how difficult it would be to learn all the Brian Blessed lines for that film.
It would be difficult. I mean, I think I could play you. Oh, I want to have sex with everything. Oh, I also do actually have a message from the actual Michael Sheen.
Oh, yes.
Because I DM'd him on Twitter and said, look, cards on the table. I've profited from you not being able to do this show. And he replied, hello, Nish. I feel like they're getting a far better deal now. Thank you for being my Richard Herring stunt double. Hello, and he's now addressing you people. Hello, Leicester Square Theatre. Yes, this is me, Michael Sheen.
Hooray, at last!
In yet another audacious inhabitation of a semi-iconic UK personality. I thought I'd try it out on you first before opening the Donmar production later this year of Nish Froxon, a cross-dressing extravaganza with a political bent. See you there.
Wow.
That's Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen. It'd be terrible if a tweet from Michael Sheen is the best thing in this podcast. But that's what we've got to...
Again, reading that, you're like, whoa, he's funny. Wish he was doing this podcast.
So, we'd mentioned Word of the Year 2017, which
Yeah,
you were
I did
on.
Word of the Year
what
2017.
What was the Word of the Year 2017?
I actually can't fully remember. It was like, they asked me to do it, and I said, does it pay? And they said, yes. And I was like, well, then I'll be fucking there. No, they asked me to do it, and I thought it was fun. And it ended up being a sort of conversation between me and my very dear friend and former guest of this show, Aisling B. Nice. And we talked about the various words of the year. And we were talking about fake news, and it was all in all a very pleasant afternoon.
I believe,
as you can hear, huge Word of the Year fans, unbelievable.
I believe the Word of the Year 2017, which is last year,
yeah,
was youthquake. was that down to you? Did you decide that?
It was.
Which
down
is a word I've never heard before.
It's a word that got used by various political analysts to describe, I think, the election result, the general election result last year.
Right.
But I think the thing is, they had to pick something positive. Like, that was a positive thing to come out of 2017. But the actual word of the year was probably something like, oh, fuck. shitting fuck. Just when you think it can't get any worse. Oh, dear.
So last week we had someone who lived in your house on the podcast. When you were on the podcast last time,
yeah.
I'm going to give a little secret away. We do record two on a week.
Sometimes, what?
Sometimes when
I watched Rose's one. I've been here for a week. What the?
Last time the other guest was someone you were at school with, and this time the other guest is someone you shared a house with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you're the most connected man in comedy.
I am the
it's
most.
All about where you went to school with Matthew Crosby.
Yeah,
going
to school with Matt Crosby. That gets you all sorts of doors open there. And then you got to live in my house with me, and I really am the kingmaker. When Rose moved in, she was a fucking little urchin orphan. She couldn't pronounce any words. She was like, oh, hello, Nish, it's me, Rose. I'm from New Zealand. I was just wondering, can you teach me how to do the comedy in your... in your country, and because at the moment I come from New Zealand and all we have is the big Lord of the Rings. And what do you do? And I said, Rose, just sit yourself down. And it was like Pygmalion. I Henry Higgins the shit out of her, and now she's won a fucking award, and where is my cut of the 10 grand?
Good question. Has another comedian moved into that bedroom?
No, actually, currently that room is vacant. Finn Taylor lived in there for a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And he arrived, a little urchin. He was like, Nish, can you teach me how to do comedy? Very offensive impression of Rose. A couple of people have lived in that room since, some comedians, some non-comedians. Currently, no one is living there. And I am... my girlfriend is about to move in. She actually is a ghost. I don't know whether... All laughed at that. It was an on-point impression of my girlfriend. No, she's not a ghost. She's just extremely white. Like that. And some people... Sometimes people say, oh, is she a ghost? And like, no, just Irish. Just like, just of Irish stock.
Is she moving into the spare room? Because that's actually not
she's
that good.
She's moving into the spare room. We've been together for 7 years, so I think at this point she's like, yeah, I'll just take the spare room. You can carry on.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? That like, our houses are very close together, or were very close together, and like, so many comedians and podcasts as well came
out. Yeah,
yeah. Like, well, so many podcasters came out.
It was a fertile time for podcasting in Shepherd's Bush, by the looks of things, with you and Stuart Goldsmith. And it was pretty weird living with Goldsmith, because one day, I get up very late, I'm a really lazy man, and one day, there was a knock on my door, and I opened it, and Matt Lucas was there, and I remember thinking, I don't remember ordering this guy. Like... It's just a very weird thing, because he's a delightful man, and he was very polite to me, but it's just very, like, I loved shooting stars, yeah. And George Dawes is quite an iconic figure in my childhood when I was growing up, and it's very unusual that you open the door and see an iconic figure from your childhood, largely because most of them are now in jail, so, like, it's great to see a figure unsullied by history.
That's true.
And turn up. But yeah, that was when Stu was doing a lot of comedian podcasts, and he's still doing them, just not in my house anymore, unless he's been breaking in and secretly podcasting in my living room.
I wouldn't put it past him.
The guy loves a podcast.
Not as good as this podcast, though. What do you think is the best Comedians Talking to Comedians podcast? him and mine.
Oh, I don't know.
No, it's definitely this one.
Yeah. This is definitely a drunker podcast. I'd done Stuart's podcast as well, and I don't remember him being half cut.
No.
As I also made my way towards that.
That's because he didn't get sponsored by beer52.com. Go to beer52.com/Rahilastipper for 8 free craft beer. The problem is, I can't remember what the deal is now. I'm not a very effective spokesman. I'm either a very effective spokesman or not an effective spokesman. This not is hey. Fuck, that's what the fuck is this guy? I can't read anymore. It's called Zamajska Pivarora. I've lost the ability to read. I know it is called that. So that's right.
Have you ever done an advert for something? Oh, sorry, yeah. Beer 52.
I haven't. I've now skirted towards sponsorship. And so I've done this.
Yeah.
A few things are sponsored this podcast. And I sort of think is... I talked to Adam Buxton and he changed my mind about it, actually. I was going to go, I'm not going to sponsor it. It's nice if the audience pay for it. But now I think it's quite nice if the audience get to have some free beer that pays for it. So I think that works. I did a podcast for a car insurance company, which I've never said the name of, even in the podcast. And I figured that was a way for me to pay for some of this podcast. And I did it on the condition that the podcast would just be us talking about issues with cars. And I would never have to say the name of the... I do two tweets that mentioned it. If you look back through, you can find out what it was.
Right.
Thanks for the money, though, guys!
I've never done an advert, and I don't particularly have any desire to do adverts, but I think no one has ever offered me an advert. So it's like, it's good for me because I've been able to take a principled stance without ever having to have those principles scrutinised in any way. But I think part of the problem for me is I look like the before guy in every advert. Like, it just looks like whatever your product is, it could somehow improve my appearance.
Well, you know, I did turn things down in the past, but I don't think I would... I think it's got to be the right thing.
Yeah, sure.
I know, that beer is good. I'm happy with that. I'm happy to give free beer.
Yeah, and also that's a good product to be affiliated with.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, I can't wait to come back in 2 years' time to replace Jennifer Lawrence on the podcast and have you open by being like, Halliburton supply many of the world's best weapons.
It'll happen. Once you've got kids, it all changes. Everything changes. But anyway, let's see what you're up to outside of
I love this because it's like this can only happen on a podcast show, because I would love it if one week Graham Norton was like, well, I'll tell you what, Zac Efron has fucking cancelled, and so we've literally had to get a bloke who lives behind me. Hello.
It's interesting. Like, you've just been on Question Time, which
nice.
I've been offered Question Time, and I've never felt like doing it, I have to say. So, did you have any qualms about it?
I basically, this is also a story I tell on stage, because I don't know why I felt the need to caveat it that way. But anyway, they asked me to do it for a while, and I kept saying, they asked me to do it for a while because Ramesh is too famous, right? But after a while, that's how it works. They just go down the brown list, right? That's how it works. Is Ramesh available? How about Anita Rani? Gandhi, dead, right? Ramesh is above Gandhi now, so he's done well, right? But they asked me, and I kept saying no, because I genuinely believe that comedians shouldn't go on Question Time, because I think you're an impediment to accountability. It should be about the electorate being able to cross-examine their MPs. And then I got fucking smashed, came home, turned on the TV, it was a bunch of people I didn't like on Question Time, and I was just sat there being like, I must go on this programme and represent my community. I'm the brown Braveheart Freedom, right? They should not accept emails that arrive after 3:30 a.m. So I got drunk and said, all right, I'll fucking do Question Time. And then the next morning I was like, why the fuck did I do that? And the first time I did it, there were two other panellists, and one was, there were a number of other panellists, but notably two other panellists were Gina Miller, who's an anti-Brexit campaigner, and Dawn Butler, who's a Labour MP, who were just impeccably qualified women of colour. And so there was literally no need for me to be there. Like, I added absolutely nothing to that panel. And then for some reason they asked me this time, and I was like, well, I've fucking done it once, I might as well just give it another crack. And like, it was, you know, it's a weird show to do. Like, they're all very nice, and everyone who works on the show is very nice. But when it's a fascinating thing. The interesting thing is to get an up close look at politicians and see how they kind of operate. And, you know, like I met James Cleverly, and the previous time I did it, I met Dominic Raab. And Dominic Raab is the Secretary of State for Brexit. And what's fascinating is when you actually get a close up look at these people who you think are fucking morons, you get a close up look of them and you realize they're fucking morons. Dominic Raab, I've talked about this before, I walked into the green room and he was saying, nice to meet you, Nish, to a man who turned out to be Gina Miller's brother. Like, literally. Like, he was like, nice to meet you, Nish. And I was like, and then he turned around and looked at me and wasn't like embarrassed. He was more surprised, like he was dealing with Eddie Murphy in Norbit.
But there was a good clip. I didn't see the actual show, but there was a good clip of you talking about Brexit very passionately.
Yeah, sure. I had a bit of a meltdown.
Yeah.
It's just like when because they're sort of bickering. Cleverly and Keir Starmer are bickering. And, you know, there's just, problem is, like, there's no detail. When you ask somebody who voted Leave, what do? They say, Leave means Leave. And you go, okay, I appreciate that Leave means Leave, but how do we leave? And they go, Leave means Leave. And you go, are you a fucking idiot? Like, the problem is that there's no detail. And when you keep asking the same questions and you get nothing, like, we don't know what's going to happen about the Irish border. We don't know what our trading relationship is going to be. We don't even know if we're leaving with or without a deal. And the problem is when you ask for specifics like that and you're treated like a sort of lunatic, you get very frustrated. And some of that frustration boiled over, and long story short, I ended up using the phrase Boris Johnson is just there sitting, squatting down and curling out his weekly Daily Telegraph columns. Oh, it really gets to you. And you know, like, my dad hasn't seen it yet. My dad finds the idea of my career in comedy very difficult to reconcile. But when I did Question Time, I think he had a sort of sense of pride about it. Like, he was like, oh, look, and now he's in America, he hasn't seen it yet. He's going to come back and be like, oh, great, you said curling one out, you fucking idiot. And it's it just boiled over in that moment, which the clip has gone around the internet.
But I feel, you know, I know people say, oh, you know, you get this liberal metropolitan elite. I don't live in the metropolitan area anymore.
So yeah, of course you don't.
I'm very much in the heart of UKIP territory. Yeah. But, you know, it's just surely most people just think, I mean, most people just wanted to be over.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And most
yeah.
people just think it's insane, surely, that what's the way it's turning
well, I
out.
Just, I can't really, surely even if you voted leave, you can't still think it's going well.
No.
You know, like, surely even if you... I would have thought if you're a Leave voter, you're the least happy person right now because it's a fucking shit show and presumably a lot of people in your social circle are not talking to you, right? But, like, I'm just confused by people who are like, no, we voted for it, let's do it, and don't offer any detail beyond that. I think that's the frustrating thing, is even if you accept that there isn't going to be a second referendum and that we are going to leave, when you say things like, how do you resolve the question of the Irish border, people are just like, oh, yeah... fucking and you're like is that the end of it? And then they say things like there'll be new technology. Like, I think they're basically banking on us inventing invisible border droids at some point before 2020.
But I think there's nothing in the original referendum that said when it would happen.
No.
So, like, people are saying it has to happen straight away. It didn't say that. It didn't say it would happen straight away. So, you know, you're already saying there's a flaw in the referendum that it didn't say when this was going to happen. It could happen in 100
Amazon
years.
Prime has really spoiled everyone. I think people aren't used to it. People genuinely want an Amazon Prime Brexit. Like, they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I can order a tube of lube and an action figure of Margaret Thatcher and be shoving it up my ass inside 24 hours. So where's my Brexit?
Gonna happen though, isn't it? Don't you think?
What, the
Brexit?
Margaret Thatcher doll going up my ass?
Well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's already happened.
That's happening right now.
It's gonna happen.
It is gonna happen. It has to happen. I hope it doesn't happen, because I think it will be a fucking shit, a disaster for the car. Like, it could be a national catastrophe, but it is happening.
That's what's good about it. I'm very much on the side of hard Brexit now. Hard Brexit.
I mean,
no
I follow
deal.
You on Twitter, so you've gone very hard Brexit.
I mean,
these
I started
days,
as a joke, and then I loved just the feeling of being a winner. It was just good. And I think by taking that position, you're in a no-lose situation, because if it works out that no deal, hard Brexit is the best thing after all somehow, I can take all the plaudits for that.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, we'll have to just go back to the EU, go, can we come back? Can we come back in now? Because we haven't got any food or beds. Yeah, yeah.
Several of our citizens have started eating each other. So the most frightening thing was when earlier this year, David Davis just kind of unprompted said, look, it's not going to be a Mad Max style dystopia. And you're like, why is that in your mind? Also, you specified Mad Max. So does that mean Blade Runner? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
I've got James O'Brien coming on. We haven't really talked about Brexit for a long time on this podcast. And we've got James O'Brien coming on in next week's recording, a couple of weeks' time after this one. And
he's furious.
He is furious.
He makes me look like a Brexiteer.
Yes. But all I did, I sent an email saying he was going to be on.
Yeah.
And I called the email Brexit. With just the SH in brackets in the middle of Brexit. And two people emailed me from my mailing list going, it's disgusting that you're... I can't think, who the fuck was following my mailing list who had no idea that I... Well, A, like you say, Brexit isn't really making a comment on what's right
not,
or wrong.
No,
and that's just saying, not going very well, is it? We should all be annoyed about it. And you've booked someone who's pro-Brexit. The other two politicians I've had on are both ex-Remainers who now believe we should leave, which is...
Ed Miliband.
And Jess Phillips.
And Jess Phillips, right,
So, like, I've obviously booked people who aren't... as hard as a Remainer as James is. But it's sort of amazing that people still get that... They go, I'm never coming to see you live again. Go, did you ever come before? Because
I
think you'd have spotted something I think you wouldn't have liked. And the need to, you know, I don't mind people leaving my mailing list, but actually two people bothered to email me back to tell me how furious they were that I had a guest that they didn't like, which was obviously the problem, and that I'd called Brexit Brexit.
But I'm fascinated to know who, like, at this point, you have not been reticent in your views about Brexit, Richard. And I'm fascinated who has clung on for this long, even with all of your... Unless they failed to appreciate, you know, like the people that thought Ali G was just a cool guy. You know? Like, they've been like, well, fucking too fucking right. You've been doing this kind of densely layered parody of a hard Brexiteer, and they're like, oh, this is fucking getting me hard. Like, this guy's on point as a commentator. But I just love the idea that... Because James O'Brien is... He's the sort of person that pushes a lot of those people over the edge. And but like I get emails. I mean, I got a Facebook message this week from on my Facebook fan page where which is very rarely used. I lost the password to it, and so I can only see things that get emailed to me. Like I can't see the messages, but I got an email from a guy, and because it came through the Facebook thing, I was able to follow his profile, and he'd said, "Listen, if it's so bad, why don't you just leave?" And his location is Spain. He's just like, why don't you fuck off back to fucking wherever the fuck you've come from? Not like British people like me who live in good British places like the Costa del Sol.
Well, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? That's the thing. It's going to be an interesting time.
It's going to be... So, like, next year, 2019, obviously, if you're listening in 2070, and you're now in the People's Republic of Brexitania... On March 29th, I'm doing the London date of my tour, which is at the Hackney Empire. So it's on Brexit night. So I'm currently looking into getting 1,500 cans of beans to give the audience as a freebie on the way in. Because by the time they leave the show, we will technically have left the EU.
It's actually quite interesting listening back to the one we did. Like, it was a week or two after the vote.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, if you listen to it, because so much is, you know, so much now is people saying, oh, we never said this, we never did this.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even if you listen to what we're talking about, no one was given any clear idea of what either side meant.
Yeah.
You know, the people, and increasingly as it's gone on, the whole story's just changed. So yeah, the thing that gets me is people go, you constantly, 17.2 million people voted for this, and you're disrespecting 17.2 million people. And those people are completely ignoring the 16 point whatever it was.
Yeah, completely. That,
so they're saying it's okay to ignore 16 million people, but come on, not 17. But surely you're ignoring 16 million. Yeah, well, that's the extra million that's the key.
I sort of slightly forgotten about the sort of details of that. But your podcast last time was the first time that I spoke about something that happened to me. On the night of the vote was announced on the Friday morning, and that night I was doing a gig at the Comedy Store, and a guy told me to go home on stage. And it's the first time I've ever been racially abused. And it felt like this huge sort of symbolic moment, because we'd left that morning. And it felt like this kind of sea change in the way that I saw this country. And it was this really incredible moment. And I talked about it at the Late Show, and then I decided, look, I'm not going to talk about it because there's so much stuff going on and I don't want to trivialise any of these issues and make it feel like it was all about me. And then, probably a couple of days before I did your show, I saw an interview with Daniel Hannan, who is a fucking moron and a stupid, useless cunt, right? And he... was giving this interview where he was asked by Christina Amanpour from CNN if the hate crime statistics rise has anything to do with Brexit. So already by that stage, they'd identified the fact that hate crimes were on the rise in the 4 or 5 days since Brexit, and he refused to acknowledge it. And so I was like, well, I now have to talk about it because my experience is being denied by a lot of the people who have driven us to this point. And so I talked about it on your show, and then I wrote a Guardian article about it because someone heard it on the show. And it became the ending of that Edinburgh show and that tour show. It was one of those amazing moments where you kind of go, no, my personal experience has value, and if I don't talk about it, I'm allowing people like Hannan to kind of co-opt the narrative and erase my experience in my life. Yeah, you know, we're all thinking it. Sheen would have been funnier.
But how has it been in the last 2 years ago since you were like, has anything like that happened again? Has it felt...
No, I think what's happened is... No, oh, fuck, of course, all sorts of shit has happened. Yeah. I did a gig in Leicester Square where I talked about Brexit, and a man unplugged my microphone. like, there was a party of 30 people in who got so furious. There was 100 people in, 30 of them kicked off violently. One of them unplugged my microphone, and another man shouted, "You, sir, are a cunt," which, if you're going to call someone a cunt, it's going to invalidate any prior use of the word sir. Like, I would argue there's no point in embarking on a sentence that culminates in the worst swear word of the English language and opening with formality, right? I've had a lot of really fractious run-ins on stage with people. Obviously, with my tour shows, by the time they come and see you on tour, they've generally got an idea of what the vibe is. I've had two people walk out because of kind of Brexit-related stuff, but even they sort of did it in... It wasn't a kind of storm out. It was more a kind of like, oh, I disagree, but I don't want to upset him because he seems insane.
And some people just love leaving, that's the thing.
You're absolutely right. You run that risk. If you upset a group of people who've defined themselves by leaving, you do run the risk of walkouts.
Yeah, they're no longer on my email list, but they still have the rights to come and... anyway, yeah, well, it's a terrifying, terrifying time.
It is indeed.
To be alive.
What? How do you feel as... you have children, and as such, your experience is more valuable than mine.
Yes,
how do you feel about the fact that your children have... You know, they're about to sort of emerge into this quite frightening place.
I mean, that's... I'm sort of worried about... In the short term, you sort of feel you can shield little children from most things.
Yeah.
But I feel more worried that the planet Earth isn't really going to be...
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the other thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And I think a lot of this is... A lot of this throwback that I actually think ultimately in the course of history, this little step backwards...
Yeah.
Hopefully will be a little step backwards. Even if it's a big step backwards, I think it will lead to things moving forwards.
Sure.
But because of the environmental aspect of all these pricks that are going to be in charge of stuff for a while, that might be too late. So I kind of worry about that, about, you know, about my children being... 18 and living in a world where, you know,
I love the idea that I've become the sort of worst type of person where I'm so obsessed with Brexit that I forget that the world's going to end. Like, I really a couple of weekends ago I was doing the Comedy Central Festival in Southampton and we did a live drunk history, and I have no memory of what happened afterwards. Me and Joel Dommett were on stage doing a live drunk history. They gave us some tequila. I got fucking shit faced, and I have no memory of what happened afterwards. And apparently I walked off stage and immediately walked into the green room and was like, "Who wants to talk about Brexit?" And just went absolutely off on anyone who would listen. And I just remember hearing that and thinking, that is very on brand.
Well, you know, it's the first step in it. And I think, like, Trump being in charge of the world's great superpower. Like, who would have thought putting an idiot in charge of the world's great superpower would lead to any problems? Who could have predicted that?
Who could possibly have seen that coming?
But so, you know, so all that he's doing, I think, is probably enough. You know, it's probably enough to mean that we can't step back from it.
Well, it's,
so that's sort of the terrifying thing about it. If we even get through,
it's the only thing I would say, like, as a positive about Trump is that about 6 months before he won, there's an African American historian called Stephen Thrasher who made a video for The Guardian where he said Trump is going to win because it's a natural progress of American history is that they have some massive significant gain in terms of civil rights and then a massive setback. So he said, you know, after the Civil War, there was Jim Crow, and the civil rights movement in the 60s resulted in police brutality in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and continuing up to this day. And he said, an African-American president means that there's going to have to be a racist president, and then everything will right itself in 2042. I mean, listen, given from what I guess 2042 is the point at which America becomes predominantly people of color. And given the demographic in this room, it is a very dangerous statement for me to essentially say, don't worry, someday all the white people will be dead.
Got Rose Matafeo in there as well.
She's fucking loving it at the back. Yeah, die, Whitey. That's my impression of her.
It's good. we'll move away from this for a second.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Sure.
Let's talk about the homoerotic tension between you and your friend on Joel Dommett going around the world together.
It was interesting because I genuinely, in my mind, was like, which one is he going to say?
You're doing a show about you. I mean, you're doing one of those shows that you look at and go, this is just guys going around the world having adventures.
It's the most ridiculous job I've ever had and will ever have. So it's called Joel and Nish versus the World, and the premise of it is that it was a show originally developed around Joel. So like, I am literally just, so basically the premise of the show is that Joel is really into CrossFit, which is they call it real world fitness. It's basically prison workouts for people who belong to a socioeconomic demographic that means they're unlikely to ever be in jail, right? And so the premise of it is it's real world fitness. So you don't use exercise machines. You just do kind of workout. I don't even fucking know what it involves, right? But he's really into that. So the idea that they thought was like, Joel goes around and lives with people who live physically. And let's see how someone who in the West is supposedly real world fit deals with people who live that way every day. Spoiler alert, very badly, right? And they basically realized in the first series that if Joel was going to do this stuff, he would need someone to sort of function as the presenter in the show while he was doing crazy stuff, aka they needed a sassy chunky ethnic. Ahoy. Again, Ramesh, too famous, right? But Gandhi, not fat enough, right? So, and in that sweet spot, that's exactly, he's not, I'm sorry, if you're ooing that, you're ignoring history, right? I went, and so basically I'm there as Joel's nerdy sidekick. Yeah. Like they, you know, I'm there, like we have that sort of, it's like an 80s buddy cop double act where he's the like handsome one and I am also there. But in the second series, so in the first series, we went to Mexico and he ran an ultra marathon. And we lived with the Chavante, who are this amazing Brazilian tribe who do these kind of crazy log races. And then in the second series, they decided that they should get me more involved. So I have now been sumo wrestling and I shat myself on a mountain in Peru. So all in all, I shat myself on camera. Oh. Like this. Basically, I was feeling a bit spicy, right? Let's just put it this way. I was thinking, where is Richard Herring's front door when I need it? And let me tell you, given the state of my stomach, you would not have been able to sweep that up easily, Richard. It would have looked like Jackson Pollock himself had committed a hate crime on your property. So I was feeling a bit dodgy. And at the beginning of every episode, Joel kind of goes, where are we, Nish? So that I can kind of do the kind of, you know, the introductory bit. And he went, where are we, Nish? And I went, well, Joel, I've got to go! And on camera, I run off into the, and then you just see me disappear. And what happened was I went into the bushes and shat myself on a mountain. Unfortunately, it did not, some of the fecal matter had already been deposited in my trues. Pretty degrading stuff. I imagine this is what a lot of you thought Michael Sheen would be like. I'll never forget when I was filming The Damned United as I was lining up in the dugout at Derby County and I shat myself, much to the disgust of Timothy Spall.
And the bit I saw, you were sporting a moustache. Was that a...
Yeah, was basically, we were with these the gauchos who are like Argentinian cowboys, and they have this kind of, they have proper, like, juicy tashes. And the producer said, oh, it'd be fun if you guys... Because it's not a very... I think people are very cynical about the way TV shows are made, and they think that there's a lot of artifice, which there really isn't with this show. And all that would happen is occasionally someone would say, it might be fun if one of you does this thing in this situation. And they said, one of the things we think would be funny is if you shave your beard and leave a moustache. And it turns out, without a beard and with just a moustache, I look like Super Mario / My Father in the 80s. However, when I returned home from that journey, that was not the opinion of the customs officials at Heathrow Airport. Because I went through the nothing to declare aisle because I had nothing to declare. And literally five guys come towards me going, where do you think you're? Turns out I think with a moustache I look like Super Mario. And they think I look like the actual Pablo Escobar. Full narcos. Yeah. But you're absolutely right to be disgusted by it. It's absurd to make a living travelling around the world with one of my best friends and having an absolute whale of a time.
You went everywhere. I mean, it's literally all over the world.
We went to Japan twice, Tahiti, New Zealand, where I did meet a shepherd.
Yeah, thank goodness someone did.
He was flying the fucking plane. Like, it was... that country's an absolute joke, right?
Did he have his crook with him?
He had his crook with him, which I did say... was like, I don't mean to be a backseat passenger in a plane, but that's going to impede your ability to pilot.
They should just put the crook into the joystick.
Also, definitely not a joystick, Richard. I think you failed pilot school. Where's the joystick? Yeah, it was a ridiculous job to have done.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It was great.
It's fun. And it's
really fun.
But it's fun to watch as well. So the horse whip guy is incredible.
Fuck me,
That's just, and you're so... was that the first time you'd seen it?
So
it's hard to explain it.
We basically, on day one, we sat on a horse and they were just sort of moving the cameras around and the horse just literally threw me off. Was it racist? Hard to say, but it didn't throw Joel off. The answer is yes, right? And so we really struggled. Like, horse riding is fucking hard for anyone, let alone two complete buffoons, right? And so they sent us to this guy who's like, he's basically a horse whisperer. But he kind of is very... They were trying to teach us some kind of horse manner, like how to be around a horse so it doesn't freak out. Because they were saying part of the reason the horse is freaking out is because you're freaking out. And I was like, yeah, but in my defense, it's a fucking horse, mate. Like, no, I'm not comfortable up here. And so they sent us to this guy to teach us, like, horse vibes. And he... I mean, listen. It is alarmingly sexual.
It's more than a horse whisperer.
Yeah, yeah, it's a horse fucker. Like, I'm not, like... He's literally, at one point, he's lying on top of the horse. Like, the horse is, like, lying back, and he's just fully on top. And it's just, the horse is completely calm, and he stands on the horse. It's wild. And they sort of showed us this thing, but it's another thing where they literally just kind of go, there's really no sort of artifice on the show. They were literally like, this is about to happen. See what you think. And you sort of walk out, and you're like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Oh... that guy's fucking a horse.
I mean, he isn't quite, but it was because Joel sort of wanders in. It's like he was doing something else.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck! Yeah, yeah. He's sort of lying on the horse and then he kind of reaches down and sort of flicks a little bit of the horse's neck.
Yeah.
The horse loves it.
I mean,
Did you have a go at doing that?
No, but let's just put it this way. I'm in that shot, I am only filmed from the waist up because I was fully erect.
Let's ask you an emergency question to get away from the
wait,
bestiality, which we do not approve of. So it's one thing to have
become,
sex.
Things have become weirdly sexual. Let's reach for my book of sex questions. My big book of dick queries. There are
many other things. Just scanning the page to find them.
It's amazing Richard didn't ask me for a cover quote.
If you had to invent a fifth season, which two other seasons would you put it in between and what would happen in it? No cocks in that.
I would invent dick season.
Oh, no.
I would put one in between... I would put one in between summer and autumn.
Okay.
Because I like autumn, and I like summer. Summer's a bit too hot. And autumn, you know you're going into winter, so it's a little bit depressing. There's a lady here, sorry, it's this lady who nodded so earnestly. As I said, I found that genuinely endearing. She was just going, that would be a fucking brilliant idea. I think let's go in between summer and autumn. Yeah. Sumtum.
Yeah, sumtum.
Let's have a bit of sumtum. It's not as hot as summer, but it's not as tum as autumn.
Okay. That sounds good.
Pretty good. Would Michael Sheen have done that?
I think I don't think he could do emergency questions. He would need to prepare for it.
Yeah, he would need
question.
To. Well,
he'd 2 weeks to live the question. Right, if you have sex with a Frankenstein,
yeah.
are you cheating on your partner?
Ooh. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes, because the Frankenstein is a sentient creature.
Mm.
Whereas I think if it's just a dead body, fire away. I say if it's a corpse with no sentience, any holes are gold.
What if part of the Frankenstein is taken from your partner? Which, and then that doesn't necessarily mean they're dead. It could be like one of their kidneys or a leg or something.
No,
so part of the Frankenstein is actually your partner.
I still think that is technically adult. I mean, if your partner's died.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, I guess it's a better version. If your partner's died, it's better that, and you're going to have sex with a Frankenstein,
yeah.
then it's better that it has a bit of your partner in it
yeah.
than none. If your partner's still alive, I think that is going to be a very, very tricky conversation.
Is it cheating to have sex with someone who has had an organ donated to them by your partner? Or is it your duty? The anus is not an organ.
Richard, I hope you live a long and full life. But I hope that when the unfortunately inevitable does happen to you, on your gravestone it reads, an anus is not an organ. I think it's definitely cheating if it's... If it's just an organ from your partner, I think that's definitely cheating. And I definitely don't think it's your duty. But the fact that you phrased it like that suggests this is a conversation you have had with your long-suffering wife.
Just, and I'm just looking for loopholes, that's all. So it's just... A lot of things aren't covered in the marriage vows, that's all I'm saying.
In sickness and in health and in the donation of an organ to a person and robots.
Got to think very carefully if you're going to get married. That's going to happen. Make sure it's all in there. So let's talk about... you've done a lot since you were last. You've done had a very full 2 years
since
you
were last.
And you've done very well. You've done Taskmaster.
I did Taskmaster. Yeah, it was... I mean, listen, did I do well at Taskmaster? Yes. I was the first person that did so badly at Taskmaster that Greg Davis took me aside and told me off. Leading to the thing that I feel will be on my gravestone, which is a direct quote from Greg Davis, which is just, you're not a bad guy, Nish. It's one of the shows, whenever people ask you about it, they're like, is it as fun as it looks? And you go, yeah. It's real fun. It's absolute fucking nonsense. It's a lot of fun. I think I've really enjoyed doing things like Taskmaster and the show with Joel in the last couple of years, because otherwise I've been doing stand-up and like some radio stuff and some TV stuff that's focused on the news, and yeah. Every day you get a kind of news story and you have to try and turn it. And it is fun to just do sometimes some fucking stupid bullshit, and it feels like really cleansing. And Taskmaster was so much fun.
Yeah, believe me, as a viewer, that is also true of your stuff.
I get the feeling you are in part relieved Michael Sheen is now not here. You've had a couple of beers and you're in a mischievous mood and you're like, I am glad that I don't have to say, did you ever see Frank Langella's dick on the set of Frost Nixon?
I'd have been very respectful to Michael Sheen.
You would have been so respectful to Michael Sheen. That's what's hard to take. If it was Sheen, he'd be like, ooh, Michael. I love the deal. With me, it's like, right, you fucking stand up as a bag of old shit.
You were on House of Games?
I was on House of Games.
How'd you get on House of Games?
Well, put it this way, my toilet rolls are currently in a trophy with Richard Osman's face on.
Well, that's very good. I've been on House of Games, and I'm not allowed to talk about it yet. It's not been televised, but I know what happened. You can probably guess, to be fair, but it's that.
Is this going to be Celebrity Mastermind over it all over again?
Pointless.
And pointless.
Well, three times pointless. We'll have to wait and see. I'm not allowed to give any clues. My toilet rolls are not in it. And so the MASH report, so, you know, it's the second series is about to start
which
seems impossible because there's been about seven series already.
So many of them. Yeah, we did 4 episodes last summer and then 6 episodes in January, and that 10 episodes was our first series. And so this is our second series, technically. A lot of people think it's the third. Tell them it's the third. It makes us sound more successful than we are. Please, for the love of God.
Can't have 2 series 6 months apart. That's insane.
Well, I mean, welcome to our world, Richard. To be completely honest with you, no one thought the pilot... When we were doing the pilot, everyone was like, this isn't going to get fucking made. Then we did the pilot, and it got commissioned. And when we did the first episode, everyone was like, it'll probably get cancelled. And then after we did the first 4, we were like, they're never bringing us back for the rest of them. And then now we're in the second series, and no one can quite believe it. Like, I just come from the office today, and everyone's kind of walking around being like, is this an elaborate hoax? We love doing it, and no one can quite believe... Because it's weird doing that kind of show. Because when we did it, the first week, there were like 4 articles in various different publications saying, this is probably going to be fucking shit. And at the time, we were like, oh, that really sucks that people are already writing us off. Now, I genuinely believe it's the greatest thing that ever happened to us. Because people saw the first episode, which was not great, but not shit. And everyone was like, this is a fucking masterpiece.
Well, it's interesting because the UK has done very, very badly at this type of show, which is a topical show that in America, there's like 10 versions of that show that are working fantastically well and have gone for many years. And in the UK, they've sort of fucked them all up.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the MASH report is definitely, you know, even from the first episode, is definitely the best one.
Yeah.
And I think when you did your second series in January, is a different series, it really found its... Well, you know, because you hit that... You and Rachel had that kind of lovely...
Yeah, that's right.
Suddenly, because Rachel was suddenly a bit more kind of involved, I guess, and did like slightly more involved bits. But then you were also involved in that, and there's a lovely relationship between the two of you, I think, has developed.
Well, it's one of those things where when the first episode, the producers had this idea that Rachel would be sort of manning a social media wall, and it would be her dealing with fake offensive tweets about the first show. And it was really funny, and it worked really nicely. And then the idea was always, well, we've got Rachel Paris, a phenomenal comedian and improviser. And the idea was, well, we'll have her do loads of stuff. And what we discovered once the series starts is it's fucking madness. And everybody is so rushed off their feet that no one has any time to come up with new ideas. And one of the things that immediately when we were talking about the six that we did in January was, we have to do more stuff with Rachel. And so we were able to like bring Rachel in for meetings, and all of us sat down and kind of talked about it. And to be honest, the way that it's been, the reason I think it's been successful, whatever success it's achieved, I think it's because of the way that it was commissioned. And the BBC showed a lot of faith by saying, we want 10. So we did a non-broadcast pilot, and then they went, we're going to do 10. Because you have to do 10. These things are so fucking hard. When you compare them, people always say, well, it's not The Daily Show to anything that tries to be in that same arena. But The Daily Show was in existence for, I think, a year before Jon Stewart hosted it, at least. It was hosted by a guy called Craig Kilborn. Stewart wasn't even the original host of The Daily Show. And in America, part of the reason these things succeed is they get ordered for 20-25 episodes, whereas here we don't normally have that scope. And so we were very lucky with the, you know, with the show that they gave us 10, and that's what I think, that's why it succeeded. And also, everyone on it is like, it's their first big thing. They basically wanted, I don't think I should say this, I'm going to say it. They basically wanted a more famous host. And they all said no. And they went down a list. And eventually they were like, him? And so that's, but because of that, I think it's the biggest thing I've ever done in my career, and it's everyone on the show's number one priority, and so it's like, it's a really fun thing to work
on. But that's, you know, I mean, TV makes this mistake again and again, both the mistakes. They judge something by episode one only, and then it's decided, and because that's often what the reviews review the first episode.
Yeah, sure.
They don't give something a chance to run in. They're too scared to go with their gut instinct on stuff, basically. And also, they try to put famous people in everything, and actually, things that are successful are allowed a bit of a run-up, haven't got a spotlight on them from the beginning, and usually, you know, if you look at The Office, none of the people in The Office, apart from Ricky
were even
known at all, you know. And, yeah. So, and those guys are now, let's put Tim from The Office in everything, isn't it?
He was the first choice for the MASH report. Like, but it's very difficult because you have to deliver a lot of it to camera, so it would have been quite tricky for him to be...
And there's that hunger, and there's trusting the people that you've got to do something to give it a good crack, and that, I think that really is interesting. So I have watched, I think, nearly all of that, the MASH report, not all of it, and you know the difference between the first and the second series, the first 1.1 and 1.2, is, you know, just it suddenly got there. You hit the ground on those second lot of six, and that, you know, you got both Rachel's thing about sexual harassment having that conversation with her, which genuinely looked like you hadn't rehearsed it.
I hadn't rehearsed it, because I am what's known in the industry as a woeful actor. So if I'd rehearsed it, I would have been like, Rachel, please do not make sex in my face. So they were like, well, we'll probably keep him out of rehearsal. And so all the reactions in that clip are genuine, yes.
And, you know, and Rachel is... I mean, it's brilliant for Rachel, who's, I think, like, has been going for a long time.
Yeah.
Done lots and lots of different things. Is so talented. And this... Just those two episodes. I mean, those first two episodes of that second lot went viral worldwide. The Trump thing and the sexual harassment thing.
The thing about Rachel is that whenever you go off script with her, she's like I've known Rachel since we both started, and she's like a musical comedian, and she's wonderful, but she's also in Ostentation and an incredible improviser. And when you go off script with her, it is, I can only imagine, it's like playing tennis with Federer. Like, it's literally like you put one back and it just comes past you at a speed you can't believe. And that's kind of it's exciting in those moments when it happens, because you can really see somebody kind of coming into their own as a performer. Like, she's fucking brilliant. And it's a lot of fun to kind of be her stooge. Like, it really is.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, I can see the MASH report becoming the Daily Show, in that hopefully they'll replace the original host with someone good for the rest of it.
Listen, I would happily be Craig Kilborn to Ramesh Ranganathan's Jon Stewart. Well, Stewart's in town, isn't he? As we record, Jon Stewart is here. So, I mean, for all those people who are like, this would be better if it hosted by Jon Stewart, write him a letter.
But no, I mean, it's great. And I just thought that I think I do. It's nice to see that something can like be given a chance and also not be held up to those kind of, you know, the things where they put. I don't know why it happens, because everything when they try to copy something else, and I don't think, you know, it's. I suppose you could say, oh well, it's trying to do an American style show, but it's not. That's a style of show. That's not the same thing. Everything where something is trying to be copied, where someone goes, "Oh, The Simpsons is good. Let's make something that's like The Simpsons." The thing that is made is terrible. You know, the reason The Simpsons succeeded was because it was
like nothing else. Yeah.
That's the thing that baffles me about the TV industry, is that people haven't spotted that. And because it's easier to go, oh, let's put the successful people in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and for someone who's been a success in something else and not taking the chance. And when there are so many comedians, I mean, that's the terrifying thing, I think, as any comedian now.
But yeah, sure.
When I started as a comedian, there were 25 comedians. you had a good chance of getting a TV show. But now there's like 1,000. There's 1,000 comedians who, you know, you could easily see getting their own TV show. So there's a lot of people to choose from.
Yeah. I just feel very, very lucky to have done the things that I've done. And like, as with a lot of people that I'm friends with, we're all just like sat there being like, I hope no one finds out that we're shit. And let's just ride this thing until someone tells us to get off. Like, it really is that level. But I give the BBC a lot of credit for the MASH report and the way that it's turned out, because there's a lot of faith shown in us that I don't think we would have been afforded necessarily on other networks.
No. Or often on the BBC. Yeah. I'm not necessarily speaking first. They gave us quite a lot of goes, actually. So your stand-up show, your latest stand-up show. I saw your last stand-up show, I think, or maybe the one before.
The one with the Brexit show?
Yeah.
The Brexit routine at the end.
Yeah. We came to see you in the Bush Theatre because it was...
Oh, yeah!
It was very easy. Was that a different one?
No, that was like a sort of weird version of a work in progress for this show. Okay. Yeah, it was probably last summer. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was. It was just before we moved, maybe.
Yeah, it was. I basically was supposed to do Edinburgh. This is how confident we were that the MASH report wouldn't get picked up. I had Edinburgh booked in because we assumed the pilot wouldn't be picked up. And so we had to then hastily cancel it. But I had a couple of gigs that I thought, well, I'll do them, especially because the Bush Theatre is so close to my current and your former abode.
Yeah, let's not give up. We can start.
Yeah, I already feel like Matt Fire has fucking shat the bed on this one. Oh, yeah. Nush loves Rock Clash 2 and Nindos. So if you are in Shepherd's Bush and you find a Nindos, you can probably find Nish's house. Oh, that's good. It's not like anyone is angry with him because of things they've said about Brexit.
So you're touring the show. Well, you've been touring this new show. It's in your nature to destroy yourself.
That's right. Yeah. It's a quote from Terminator 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I didn't get that. At what point does that happen?
There's a bit in it where two children are fighting with toy guns when they're in New Mexico going to the armory.
Yes,
and John Connor
is.
Says, we're not going to make it, are we? And the Terminator says, it's in your nature to destroy yourselves. And I really like it because it sounds like... I've been thinking about that quite a lot since Brexit and Trump. And I really like it because initially people assume that it's from some sort of highbrow source. And you go, nah, mate, Arnie. Got ya.
And you're touring that. You've been touring it already, and you're touring it again in January.
I've done about 19 dates, and now we're on a pause, a hiatus, so I can do the MASH report. And then in January, I'm back on the road.
Cool. Has the MASH report doubled your audience, tripled your audience?
Yeah.
Halved your audience?
I mean, my last tour, I performed to an audience of 15 in one show, Richard. So it has quite literally doubled it. It's increased it in some areas by a factor of 200%. The thing that it does, and you must have found this touring down the years, is that what it does is it gives you the 10 minutes at the top of the show where if people don't know who you are, they think this could be shit. And what it does give you is that just 10 minutes buy-in off the top, like of just being like people just assuming it's going to be good before it starts.
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen to me. I know, but it's interesting, I think, again, as a comedian... it's so hard now, I think, to, again, that I just sort of admire young comedians and the drive people have. because it's so hard to break through, and to get to that stage of touring is like an incredible achievement.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is something I'm quite proud of in myself, in that, you know, as a solo comedian, I sort of had to start again, and I was starting from, you know, 25, 30 people come to see me.
Yeah, yeah.
And 15 years later, I can sometimes get 40 people now. I've had 500, 600 people occasionally come to see me, and still sometimes 100 people come to see me. And so you've built that up, but it obviously helps if you get like a, if you get a boost, and you know, you've been doing.
It definitely has given the tour numbers a boost. I mean, look, next year we've booked in some room sizes that are, let's face it, optimistic, but the 250, 300 seat rooms, it's given a real boost to, and it's been, the shows have been, you know, the shows have been really good fun, and like, it's a really enjoyable thing to sort of get to do, and you know, like, what's fun about it is that when you do have like a tour manager, and that takes the pressure off. It's fun when you have a support act. Some of the support acts are nicer than others. I've been supported on a number of occasions by Rosie Jones this tour, who is a fucking piece of shit. Rosie's a very funny comedian. She has cerebral palsy, and she has a fun new game where when we're in public together, she throws herself on the floor and shouts, "Help, help, the man from the MASH report pushed a disabled girl." But it's that, like, that's the sort of fun of it, like, it's touring with people and like getting to do that, and it's good fun. I've really loved it.
Oh, good. It's well, you know, it's great to see people, you know, pushing through in this way, and you know, especially like 2 years ago, I was worried for you. And now I think you're probably going to be okay.
That, this exact conversation with my mother. A couple of years ago, Nish, we were thinking, "For fucking hell, is it law conversion? Like, can we do something in that arena?" And now, well, now we're thinking, well, maybe you'll, maybe teaching.
You've got beautiful eyes.
Thanks, Richard.
I just wanted to tell you that.
Does Sheen have beautiful eyes? Where the fuck are you, Sheen, with your eyes?
I was going to say something else, but it's gone.
Is it that I've got a beautiful penis? Possibly.
I've yet to see. You've got an impressive anus. If that, if that shit was yours, then I'm very impressed.
There's a mountainside in Peru that can testify to the quality of my anus, Richard.
Look, have a fantastic time with this series of Mashport, which will probably all have been out by the time. How many episodes are in this?
We got six episodes.
Yeah, it will all have been gone by the time.
It'll all have been gone.
It'll come and gone. People have judged it.
Watch it illegally online, which is what you fucking people seem to do, leading to my exec to describe our ratings as being at the lower end of acceptable.
That gig in the Bush City was lovely. It was kind of an early evening gig, so it was perfect.
Yeah, it was really it was really nice, and it was a delight to see you there, Richard. Yeah, nice. You know,
if you come and gig in that my village hall, I'll come and see you then as well. So we'll see if that's on your itinerary.
You know, it always means a lot. I'm a long-standing friend of your wife, because we started comedy at the same time.
That's right.
And I've always been a big fan of yours. And I've, you know, I'm
not so much that when Matt Lucas came to your door, he said, "There's a childhood hero," and I was living behind the house. You never came round and said, "Excuse me, mate. Just wanted to say I love Fist of Fun." You were always the funny one. I don't understand how it's... You'll be podcasting in 10 years. So, ladies and gentlemen. he's no Michael Sheen, but can you please give a massive round of applause to my fantastic guest, Nish Kumar.
Cheers, Chris.
Thank you very much. To Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Nish Kumar. The music is by Pest. The people I thank traditionally are everyone who works for the Leicester Square Theatre. They are all fantastic people. Everyone who works for the British Comedy Guide, nearly all of them are good people, but one of them is pure evil. Thank you to everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. They're all right. I'd like to thank my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to him. I'd also like to thank this week's executive producer. Came back with some very strong notes, Martin Bailey. Thank you, Martin. I don't think the show would have been as good without you. This is a Fuzz, GoFuzzTheStripe.com and Sky Potato production. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.